Welcome back to Art and Words with your host, Avery Reagan. Today we have two new guests joining us. We have Mackenzie, one of our experts on finding deeper connections and connecting real-world evidence, and we have Camille, one of our scholars who did a study on the book that was chosen, Americana by Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. For you new viewers out there, Art and Words is a podcast where we dive into the sensitive topics handpicked by you. So today, we'll be talking about race and identity. Special shout out to Mrs. Sheehan for choosing today's topic. To begin, we'll be going over aspects about the book and give a general summary, so if you haven't read the book, spoiler alert! Alright, so let's get started. Camille, you did a study on the book. Can you tell us a little bit about Americana?
Yes, today we're going to expand on issues of race and identity explained in Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie's novel, Americana. So Ifemelu, a Nigerian woman, moves to America to study at university. Her life in Nigeria was good because she was with the love of her life, Obinze. She meets up with her aunt in America. Once she reaches this foreign country, she struggles to make enough money to pay for rent. This ultimate challenge sends her basically to become a prostitute needing money that desperately. Being from Africa, her identity in America led to struggles of her own self-identity and her place amidst race in America. In America, she is treated like a Black American, but she's not a Black American. She's an African living in America, and in the novel, she differentiates the qualities that she has from those that most other Blacks have living in America. She was different than most of them, but in America she'd be treated as if she was the same because of the color of her skin. After the beginning chapters, each chapter is a flashback, helping the audience to better compare her life in Nigeria to her life in America.
Going off of that, recently in an interview with actress Lupita Nyong'o, she covers the consequences of colorism and how she's been personally affected. Nyong'o was raised in Kenya and later moved to the United States to earn a bachelor's degree in film and theater studies. Nyong'o told BBC that colorism is the daughter of racism, and in fact that colorism is the prejudice against the people with darker skin tone or the preferential treatment of people of the same race with a lighter skin tone. Nyong'o stated that she grew up feeling uncomfortable in her skin tone because she felt like the world around her was awarded with lighter skin. She said that her younger sister had a lighter skin tone that would get called beautiful and pretty, which in Nyong'o's eyes translated that she was not worthy due to her darker skin tone. Similar, in Ifemelu's blog post called Why Dark-Skinned Women, Both American and Non-American Love Barack Obama, she addresses colorism when it is connected with love. Ifemelu writes that many American and non-American Black men prefer lighter-skinned women whether they realize it or not. She states that people pretend that this is a way of thinking that is no longer prevalent, despite the fact that they will jump on the idea of labeling themselves to be mixed or have some Indian in order to be perceived as more powerful and avoid colorism. Many dark-skinned Black women look up to Barack Obama because he married a dark-skinned Black woman. Many dark Black women hope that this marriage being so out in the public will change society's image of dark-skinned Black women.
So now is the 30-second recap. The chapter begins with Ifemelu moving to an apartment in Baltimore to live near her new lover, Kurt. When she is arriving by taxi, the driver comments on her outfit by saying that it's too tight American, which catches her off guard and makes her feel self-conscious. When sinking into her new life, she spends more time with Kurt, and she soon realizes because of her race, she will always be a bit socially isolated from Kurt's close family and friends. Then, Ifemelu starts losing her hair because of the chemicals he used to relax it, so she cuts it all off. She begins to feel self-conscious about her look, causing her to skip work for a couple days and goes onto Kurt's computer to find some short hair inspiration, but quickly finds romantic emails from a woman. Ifemelu becomes angry and jealous of the woman's looks and hair, but after Kurt makes up for his mistakes, she continues to find ways to love herself through an online website where African women embrace their natural hair. The chapter ends with a blog about why Black women like Barack Obama and the dilemma that light-skinned Africans tend to be more successful than dark-skinned Africans.
So now we're going to take a look into a deeper analysis of the text and the topic of identity. At the beginning of chapter 20, we're informed that Ifemelu has grown to like the city of Baltimore and its culture, a culture that's different from her own Nigerian culture. The scene then has Ifemelu getting into a taxi where the taxi driver tells her that she doesn't seem like she is from Nigeria, or looks African at all because of the way she's dressing, the problem being her blouse is too tight. In Nigeria, people typically wear long, loose clothing that masks their body, so the fact that she was presenting herself in this way to a person who is knowledgeable of the Nigerian culture, she's just sort of viewed as a fraud by him, and in turn, this sparks a sense of self-doubt in Akimola's identity. In fact, it causes so much doubt that she feels the need to run to the bathroom and check to see if her blouse is indeed too tight.
To continue with the running theme of her struggle with identity, Efemlu starts to lose her hair after getting it relaxed, which causes her to cut it all off, also leading to some self-doubt. It is inferred that she first felt the need to relax her hair due to American society's standards. It was a given that in order to get a well-paying job or even a job at all, according to her friends, her hair needed to be relaxed. But because the relaxer led to more difficulties and issues, it is evident that she is affected by an internal struggle that the world doesn't want her to change or wants her to realize her own beauty and worth for what it is. She has to end up cutting her hair, which forces her out of conformity and forces her to love herself, including her natural hair.
The struggle with identity stems from the fact that she is forced out of her original culture of clothing because she is no longer comfortable with the way she's dressing in comparison to the way of the other Americans, and she is also forced out of her culture of hairstyle, which she was comfortable with, but is now having to change due to American standards.
The whole ordeal leads to a confusion of identity, and Efemlu is no longer certain if she prefers the culture of her origins or the new implied culture of America.
Now that we've covered the topic of identity, we're going to cover the topic of race in this chapter. The cover of race is much less discussed in this chapter, despite the fact that it is alluded to in the discussion of identity. Towards the end of the chapter is the first direct call to attention of race in Ifemelu's blog post that I have covered briefly earlier in this episode. In the blog post, Ifemelu writes that many American and non-American blacks try to slap a separate racial label on themselves so that they can try to not be labeled as too dark, which in turn allows them to avoid discrimination based on their skin tone. As shown on page 264, many American blacks proudly say that they have some Indian, which means thank God we're not fully blooded. And on page 265, now my fellow non-American blacks, what is it with Ethiopians thinking that they're not black? And small islanders eager to say that their ancestry is mixed. This habit of people to jump on the idea of being an ethnicity that they're not just to fit into society's mold of what is beautiful and what does not fit into the very Eurocentric standards of beauty and have been ingrained in most of us due to colonialism.
Ready. Okay, now it's time for a sacred text reading. Page 256. His friends were like him, sunny and wealthy people who existed on the glimmering surface of things. All right, so to me, this means there are people who we look at, people who we perceive to be perfect. They're above it all, you know? The chaos can't touch them. This text is about how some people have every aspect of their lives together, and they're not even really living the real life. They're just floating above the chaos of real life, like they're on some sort of cloud. Reagan, what does this mean to you?
It means to me that, like, when people are comparing themselves to others, like, they often receive them to, like, only on the surface level. And especially if, like, for Efemlu's case, it can be assumed that she is a bit jealous of their simplicity of life because she has gone through so much to get where she is and she still feels that she's less than compared to Kurt's friends just because they're sunny and wealthy and she's just trying to, you know, go day by day and get through it. And like when you,
Mackenzie, what does it mean to you?
So to piggyback off of what Reagan said, I also agree that it could be seen that Efemelu is jealous of Kurt and his friends because she, in my eyes, I'm seeing that she's putting them on a bit of a pedestal because she's gone through so much to get where she is, and they were just handed, like, that wealth and money and, like, I guess happiness could be put with it to the point where she feels like everything that she's gone through isn't, like, as useful as it could be because she's not at the point where they are when they haven't had to put in nearly as much work.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
Camille?
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm thinking that in Ifemelu's mind, she's assuming that Kurt's life is perfect and simple, as well as his friends, because they don't really express their problems as outwardly, because like everyone has their own problems, big or small, but in today's world, like, people would prefer to be seen as having an easy life and having a happy life, and so perhaps Kurt doesn't want people to see that side of his life to deceive everyone to thinking his life is perfect.
That's an interesting take.
So our next piece of text is on page 264, and it says, "Posting on the website was like giving testimony in church. The echoing roar of approval revived her." To me, this shows just like, it connects to like the age of social media and how it takes over our lives and how we're constantly working to be like appreciated by others, like for a like on our post or our tweet. It's just, it makes us feel good about ourselves, and if we put something out there that doesn't get appreciated like that, then we feel like our work has been like unmeaningful and worthless, and it kind of doesn't make us want to continue on with what we're doing. Avery, how do you feel about this piece of text?
You know, I really have to agree with that. You know, especially with the world we're living in today, people are always looking for approval in everything that they do. It's like, you know, unless they get that approval, unless they get that like or that comment that really, you know, puts a smile on their face, whatever they're doing isn't even valid. You know, once someone agrees, you know, that it's good or that they like it, that's when it gets real, and that's when it becomes important to them. Like in Nakamela's case, she's always anxious. She's always talking about how she's anxious about the blog whenever she posts it. It's like she almost regrets posting it until she gets those comments that are like, you know what, I agree with what you're saying, sister, go ahead, you know. And they're all agreeing with her, and they think that what she's doing is good and what she's saying is, you know, agreeable.
Yeah, I like that. Reagan, how do you feel about this piece of text?
Yeah, I mean, I really agree with both of you. Again, also be taken out of, like, the social media realm and just in, like, everyday life, like, when talking about your personal success, just it really shows that the human tendency for the need for validation and recognition in order to feel, like, that inner truth to yourself. And so that can be seen through imposter syndrome, which a lot of people who just every day, like, whether you're really successful or you're just, like, trying to get a really good grade on your math test or something like that, but everyone really has a little bit of imposter syndrome, and for FMLU, she kind of has that with her blog, where she needs other people to validate her own truth so that her, like, so that she internally can feel that as well.
I agree with that. Camille, how do you feel about this?
I agree with all of y'all, and going back to social media, we are given this perfect image of who we need to be and what we need to wear and what we need to look like, and like with Instagram models and now VSCO girls, like, people are changing who they are to fit that stereotype because they want to be perceived as cool or normal, when they, like, inside it's not who they really are, and so they're trying to be someone who they're not to gain others' approval.
Alright, yeah, this has been really deep reading. So good text. Alright.
This week, we would like to recognize Kurt for being the catalyst for FMLO self-consciousness. Although they are in a relationship and appear to be happy, FMLO finds herself comparing her struggles with those of Kurt's friends, which are much less prevalent than hers due to their prosperity.
Alright guys, that's a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us today. Let us know what you think about today's topic in the comments below. And if you have any future topics you want us to cover, shoot our staff an email at artandwords@gmail.com and we'll review your suggestions.
Once again, if you'd like to continue to listen to our content, subscribe and get reminders for when we release our new podcast. Thank you for listening. Tune in next week for another topic. This has been Avery, Reagan, Mackenzie, and Camille on Art and Words.